माधव कुंज बिहारी जया गोपी जना बल्लभ गिरीवराधारी जया गोपी जना बल्लभ गिरीवराधारी यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दना व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्द व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन जमुनातीरवनचारि तेरा गणाचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरीवराधारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरीवराधारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन 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 जमुना तेरा वनचारी जमुना तेरा वनचारी माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रियवराज का आचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। इस्कॉन बीपीटी फाउंडर चाहिए डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। श्री श्री गौरनिताय की जय। श्री किशोर किशोरी की जय। श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा महारानी की जय। श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। समवेत भक्तविंद की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। Prabhu, how long does class go? 8:30. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Text Number 27. The chapter is called Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Please repeat. Atrapi udaharantimam itihasam puratanam yamasya preta बंधूनां संवादं तं निबोधता अत्राप्युदाहरन्तीमं इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबंधूनां संवादं तं निबोधता अत्राप्युदाहरन्तीमं इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबन्धूनां संवादं तं निबोधत अत्राप्युदाहरन्तीमं इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबन्धूनां संवादं तं निबोधत। अत्राप्युदाहरन्ति मम इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबन्धूनां संवादं तं निबोधत। अत्राप्युदाहरन्ति मम इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबन्धूनां संवादं तं निबोधत। अत्रापि उदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहासं पुरातनं अत्रापि उदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबन्धूनां संवादं तं निबोधत। लेडीस् अत्रापि उदाहरन्ति माम् इतिहासं पुरातनं यमस्य प्रेतबन्धूनां संवादं तं निबोधत। अत्र इन् दिस् कनेक्षन् अपि इण्डीड् उदाहरन्ति दे सैट् इमं दिस् इतिहासं हिस्ट्री पुरातनं very old. Yamasya of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, who gives judgment after death. Pretabandhunam of the friends of a dead man. Samvadam, discussion. Tam, that. Nibodhata, try to understand. Translation proper by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this regard, an example is given from an old history. This involves a discourse between Yamaraj and the friends of a dead person. Please hear it attentively. Purport. The word itihasam puratanam means an old history. The Puranas are not chronologically recorded, but the incidents mentioned in the Puranas are actual histories of bygone ages. Thank you, it was a little loud. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Mahapurana, the essence of all the Puranas. The Mayavadi scholars do not accept the Puranas, but Srila Madhvacharya and all other authorities accept them as the authoritative histories of the world. So we'll read a few more to verse number 34. No, 34. Okay. Ushi Nareshva Bhudraja Suyagnya iti Vishruta Sapatnair Nihato Yuddhe Gnyatayastam Upasata. In the state known as Ushinara, there was a celebrated king named Suyagnya. When the king was killed in battle by his enemies, his kinsmen sat down around the dead body and began to lament the death of their friend. Vishirna ratna kavacham vibhrashta bharana srajam sharanibinna hridayam shayanam masriga vilam prakirna kesham dhvastaksham rabhasa dashta dachadam rajakunta mukham bhojam chinna yudhabhujam mride ushi narendram vidhina tatha kritam patim mahishya prasamiksya dukhita hatasmanatheti karairuro bhrisham gnantyo muhushtat padayorupapatan. His golden bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places, his hair scattered and his eyes lusterless. The slain king lay on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced with the arrows of the enemy. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess, and thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position. His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms with his sword and other weapons were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Ushinara saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying, "O Lord, now that you have been killed, we have also been killed." Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding their breasts at the feet of the dead king. Purport. As stated here, Rabasa Dashta Dachadam, the dead king, while fighting in anger, bit his lips to show his prowess. But nonetheless, he was killed by providence, vidhina. This proves that we are controlled by higher authorities. Our personal power or endeavor is not always supreme. We must therefore accept the position offered to us by the order of the Supreme. Rudatyuchai dayatangri pankajam sich sinchantyashrai kuchakung kumarunai visrashtakesha bharana shucham rinam srijantya krandanaya vilepire. As the queens loudly cried, their tears glided down their breasts, becoming reddened by the kunkuma powder, and fell upon the lotus feet of their husband. Their hair became disarrayed, their ornaments fell, and in a way that invoked sympathy from the hearts of others. The queens began lamenting their husband's death. Aho vidaratra karunena na prabho bhavan pranito driga gocharam dasham ushi naranam asivrittida pura krito dhuna yena shucham vivardhana. O Lord, you have now been removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight. You had previously sustained the livelihood of the inhabitants of Ushinara, and thus they were happy. but your condition now is the cause of their unhappiness. Tvaya kritagne navayam mahipate katham vinasyam asruhittamenate tratranuyan tatranuyanam tavavira padayo shushrushatinam dishayatrayasyasi. O king, O hero, you were a very grateful husband and the most sincere friend of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Purport. Formerly, a Kshatriya king was generally the husband of many wives. And after the death of the king, especially in the battlefield, all the queens would agree to accept Sahamarana, dying with the husband who was their life. When Pandu Maharaj, the father of the Pandavas, died, his two wives, namely the mother of Yudhishthira, Bhima and Arjun, and the mother of Nakula and Sahadev, were both ready to die in the fire with their husband. Later, after a compromise was arranged, Kunti stayed alive to take care for the little children, and the other wife, Madri, was allowed to die with her husband. This system of Sahamarana continued in India even until the time of British rule, but later it was discouraged, since the attitude of wives gradually changed with the advancement of Kali Yuga. Thus, the system of Sahamarana has practically been abolished. Nevertheless, within the past 50 years, I have seen the wife of a medical practitioner voluntarily accept death immediately when her husband died. Both the husband and wife were taken in procession in the mourning cart. Such intense love of a chaste wife for her husband is a special case. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu is using a time-honored technique of teaching, which is you teach someone what you want them to know by giving the example of someone else. Because typically, when we hear correction for ourselves, it's very difficult for us to bear. You shouldn't be doing that. Why are you doing that? And we think, I'm not doing anything wrong, right? The immediate reaction of a human being is to become defensive and to say, no, actually, I'm just fine. And in fact, it's the circumstances that are causing this whole situation. And clearly, you don't understand my circumstances, right? And since you don't know my circumstances, and I'm under considerable pressure, so clearly your instruction doesn't really count for me. Okay, so human beings, we're very expert at justifying our behavior in various ways. And so much more effective often than telling someone directly what to do and what not to do is to give the example of someone else. And this is used, for example, in the teaching of children, but also in adults, where, in India there were the Hitopadesha, and in the West, a lot of these stories, same stories actually, traveled to the West, and in ancient Europe were the Aesop's fables. Any of you have heard the Aesop's fables? Yeah. And the Hitopadesha in India. These are stories of animals that are told to illustrate certain moral lessons. Now, why animals? Is because it's very easy to hear about the faults of animals. Yes, you think, oh, that's how animals behave. But the idea is, someone who's a little intelligent will realize, if the fox behaves in this way, then maybe I shouldn't also behave in that way. Right? And so we take that example and we put it as a parallel to ourselves. And so this is what's happening here, essentially, is his mother and his sister-in-law and his nephews. Hiranyaksha has just been killed, his younger brother, by Lord Vishnu in the form of Varaha, the boar. And he's telling them, look, you shouldn't lament like this. I'll tell you a story. And the story, of course, is very similar to the actual situation here, right? But especially in a time of grief and a time of difficulty, it's much easier and much softer to hear that instruction by hearing about someone else. Narada Muni does the same thing in Srimad Bhagavatam when he instructs the king, Prachina Barhishat. He was a king who was overall a good person, but completely absorbed in sense enjoyment, kind of became lost in his position as king and all the enjoyment in that position. And Narada Muni comes to him and says, and of course he was cultured, and so he received Narada Muni nicely, and he asked him to give him some instruction. And Narada Muni, instead of saying, "You king, you're in Maya completely," which would be very difficult for the king to digest. After all, kings, like all of us, have large egos and big sense of who they are themselves. I'm in this great position. Who can tell me what to do? So he tells instead the story of King Puranjana, another king. And as he goes through that story, everyone likes to hear a good story, yes? So he's listening attentively. Yes, okay, Puranjana. And as he's following the story, the king realizes, that actually Puranjana is Prachina Bhari. Right? This is a story about me that's being told, and I better get my act together. So we often find this in scripture, that in Shastra, also in day-to-day life, that teaching another person, instructing another person by giving an example is much easier to digest. Prabhupada gives the Bengali saying also that a mother-in-law teaches her daughter-in-law by teaching her own daughter. So she'll chastise her own daughter in front of the daughter-in-law in order to make a particular point. Right? You should be acting in this way. That's much easier to digest than if you directly chastise yourself. So, in this way, Hiranyakashipu is behaving in a very effective manner. He's a very skilled teacher, skilled politician, skilled diplomat. He's very learned, as you've been reading in these past several verses. He understands the philosophy of spiritual life. He also understands the way in which the social system of this world works. He understands how spiritual civilization works, and thus he knows exactly how to undermine it very well. So he's in earlier verses he's describing about how all of human civilization is founded on Brahminical principles. Effective human civilization, protection for cows, study of scripture, performance of sacrifices, and the key to all of this are the brahmanas. And so if we destroy the brahmanas and we destroy Brahminical culture, this will destroy the peace and happiness of human civilization. It will stop sacrifices, and when those sacrifices are stopped, the demigods will become upset. And the demigods are in fact limbs of the Supreme Lord, and so when they are upset, then the Lord himself will be upset also. In this way, he knows the whole system of this creation. He has spiritual knowledge of the difference between body and soul. He knows the system of creation and how to get at the Lord. He understands how things work, the whole process of sacrificial activity and how effective it is. Hiranyakashipu is exceedingly qualified in so many different ways. As a politician, as a teacher, as someone with spiritual wisdom and knowledge. But he's missing something. Despite the fact that he has all of these qualifications, what is he lacking? What's the problem with his instruction here? With his teaching, despite the fact that he knows what he's talking about, clearly, as we can see from Prabhupada's purports, that There's nothing wrong with what he's saying. He knows what he's talking about, and he knows how to talk about it. He knows how to teach. So he knows content, and he knows effective technique, method. Two most important things for a teacher. Yes, you have to know what you're talking about, and you have to know how to convey it so your students can understand. And both things he's expert at. So why would you not want Hiranyakashipu as your teacher? Maybe you would. Anyone want Hiranyakashipu as their teacher? No, probably not, right? Why not? Why not? He knows what he's talking about, and he's an effective teacher. He's got good method, teaching technique. Yeah. No devotion to Krishna. Okay, but the content is good, right? He's teaching us the difference between body and soul, and even if you don't have bhakti, that's the first step to achieving bhakti for Krishna, is to know I'm the spirit soul. So why not take that good content from him, even if he doesn't have bhakti? Yeah. Good. Exactly. Because as we'll see, his primary problem here is that he's a hypocrite. What did he do just before he started this instruction about how we have to be peaceful and not lament for the material body and the spirit soul is eternal? And what did he just do? Yeah, he criticized Lord Vishnu, but what did he do besides talking? You know, he set up the whole destruction of Vaishnav culture. He said, go destroy the Brahmanas, kill them, destroy Vedic sacrifices, go terrorize the universe, and told the demons, this is my plan for undermining Lord Vishnu's whole system and ultimately killing him. And when the blood flows from the body of Lord Vishnu, that blood will satisfy the soul of my brother, who is so fond of sucking blood, he says. So he's saying, don't be affected, don't lament over the suffering, the death of your brother. But then he behaves in such a way so as to clearly show that he's considering him the material body and behaving in that way of deeply affected, right? That this is my brother, and as a result, let's go destroy the world. So the point being that because he's being so duplicitous, so hypocritical, therefore his teaching has no value. It has no value and ultimately no benefit. You see, in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness, we're not looking for perfection. Because perfection is something that takes a long time to achieve. And even then, the living entity can never be perfect, because the Lord is perfect, right? He is supreme. And so, even very, 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 very advanced devotees slip and fall at times. They get confused about their duty at times. Whether it's because of their own weakness or whether it's for the purpose of teaching others, the point is that the Lord demonstrates that even a very advanced person may not be perfect in everything they say or in everything they do. And from Maharaj Bharat to King Yudhishthira to Arjuna to so many great devotees, we see this again and again and again and again in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is, in fact, in one way, the collection of stories of great devotees of the Lord who sometimes stumble, and we learn something from their stumble about what we have to be careful about in our own spiritual life, in our own Krishna consciousness. So, being perfect in every way, never making a mistake, well, that clearly is a standard that is going to be difficult, if not impossible, for us to achieve. So that's not the criterion for being a teacher, being a bona fide teacher. But what is the criterion? What we're looking for is not perfection, but honesty. Honesty on the path of spiritual life. That we're able to say, this is who I am, this is where I'm at, and I'm trying my level best to behave according to the instructions I've received. In that case, sometimes we may not behave exactly appropriately. We become weak, we slip, we fall. So we hear the story of Jad Bharata, we hear the story of Jayan Vijay. So that may happen, but that's okay. But when we go out and we intentionally or out of negligence, we decide, no, I want to do one thing and speak another. I want to behave in a way that is not honest or is hypocritical, then that person is basically demonstrating demoniac qualities. This is what makes him a demon, Hiranyakashipu. This is what makes him a demon. Is, you see, he's very qualified in every way. But that qualification is of no use because it's not, there's no genuine practice connected with it. And so, it said, in terms of receiving spiritual knowledge, right, that how does that verse begin? Okay, I remember the second line. Putam harikatamritam shavanam naiva kartavyam sarpo chishta yathapaya. The first line I'm not remembering. So, is described that one should not listen to spiritual knowledge. Harikatha means pastimes of the Lord. Putam harikathamritam, which are otherwise putam or pure. So the stories of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord are not impure. They never become impure, even if they're spoken by someone like Hiranyakashipu, right? And therefore we hear them in Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada writes purports, and we learn from those stories. Because the Lord's pastimes are pure, but we should not take the risk of listening to them from the mouth of someone, Avaishnava, there it is, Avaishnava mukhod girnam, putam harikathamritam. Harikathamrita, when it is comes from the mouth of Avaishnava, someone who is not a Vaishnava, means who? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the quality of a Vaishnava, definition of a Vaishnava, is someone who practices. Right? Achar. Someone who practices what they actually talk about. Someone who is a Vaishnava, who is not practicing. A Vaishnava mukhod girnam, udgirna. That word in Sanskrit is a very intense word. Udgirna means vomit. Right? Harikatha, pastimes of Lord Krishna, that are vomited from the mouth of someone who is not a Vaishnava. Although pure in themselves, putam, shavanam naiva kartavyam, we should not hear such katha. Why? Sarpo chishta yathapaya. It's like milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Milk left over from the bowl that a serpent drinks from, uchishta. Although the milk itself, there's nothing wrong with it. It wasn't bad milk. But when mixed with the poison coming from the mouth of the serpent, and the serpent's quality is same, right? Duplicitous, envious, dishonest. The reason a serpent is considered such a cursed creature is because it will attack even when there's no cause for attack. It'll creep up in the middle of the night and just bite a sleeping child. Other animals don't behave in such ways. A snake will kill its own young, right? It'll eat its own children. Again, this is duplicitous. Your role is to take care of your children. And yet one who is meant to be taking care, ends up killing and harming the very person who is entrusted to your care. A mother killing her own children. What could be worse in this world? We hear such stories happening these days. So when that quality of duplicitousness, of dishonesty is present, then it becomes sarpo-cheshta, it becomes touched by the lips of a serpent. And it will do harm rather than give benefit, despite the fact that what's being given is actually the highest. So this is a very important lesson for us to remember as devotees, that more than being ideal in every way, or perfect in every way, the first thing we need to be is honest. And that honesty begins by being honest to ourselves, to the Lord. And then it will manifest in honesty in our behavior. You see, too often we are not honest in our behavior with others. We present ourselves, promote ourselves in a particular way, because we believe ourselves to be like that. Yes. We genuinely think that I am that great devotee that people think I am. And then in an effort to maintain my own image of myself, I have to maintain the image I present to others. So we don't often realize that honesty begins with being honest with our own selves. And realizing, no, first, let me pop the bubble and understand who am I really? What is my level? What is my condition? And when we become honest with ourselves, with the Lord, with the spiritual master, then that honesty can then reflect in our behavior with others also. Rather than the opposite way. Usually it goes in the opposite direction. Instead of starting here and then moving out, being genuine in our behavior with others, we begin there, right? Oh, Prabhu, you're so wonderful. Someone told me that yesterday. So I think, okay, I must be really wonderful. And so I take what it is that others say about me, and I build my own understanding of myself based on what others are telling me. And then, because what others say about me will 90% of the time not match with who I am, very few people can actually see us for who we are. Spiritual master can see us like that. Our close mentors and guides and friends can see us like that. But most people cannot. So we build our image of ourselves based on what others think of us, but that's not who we are, right? So what's the net result? Now we have to work really hard to pretend, to maintain that image of ourselves so that it continues to match with what people say I am. So, if someone tells me, Prabhu, you're such an advanced devotee, so austere, so pure, and actually you're really, really sincere too. Or even let's take a simpler case. You look so handsome today. You're really good looking. Now, what kind of pressure does that create? I have to now spend a lot of time in front of the mirror making sure that I maintain that good looking impression. And next time when someone doesn't think I'm good looking, oh, you're looking terrible today, what happened? Now all of a sudden, my own sense of self is damaged. And I become completely down and depressed. You see how it works both ways. It lifts us up, but also the flip side of it is it damages, in the end, our false ego also. And it pulls us down again. In general, the world works like this. What is in the outside, you internalize and take it here. Then you try to twist something inside in order for it to match what is outside. And we end up living our life wearing masks. Masks, different masks in different situations to match what people expect of us in that situation. So I go to work as a professor in a university. There I put on a particular mask. Yes? The mask is I am professor. And I behave in a particular way. With a certain sense of authority, a certain sense of benevolence towards my students. I tell them what they need to and don't need to be doing. I guide them. Right? And I'm used to students being respectful towards me because, of course, I control their grade in my hand. Yes? Now, that mask, when I go home from work, I take that mask off. I have to. Because if I go home and I tell my wife, okay, so you better be doing this and better be doing that and you guys this, they're going to go, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? Okay, you may be a husband here, but you know, why don't you take out the trash for a change? They don't believe that I'm professor there, right? That's not the mask. I put on a different mask. And then I come to some other situation, a social situation with friends, and now I take that mask off, put on the other mask of charming socialite and talking nicely and impressing people with funny jokes, and you want to be the center of the party. You see, people are so different at home and when they're in social life. At home, they'll be grumbly and irritated and barking away at their family. And they go outside and they're very charming and social and very nice and easy to get along with. This is how the world works in general. You see, this is how Hiranyakashipu is behaving. He was just a few verses ago with his demonic friends. And he was telling them what to do. Okay, you go down, you terrorize the earth, you kill the brahmanas, you do this, you do that. And we are going to kill Vishnu and suck his blood. And now he's with his family and he's saying, it's okay, be detached. Don't lament for the material body, we'll all be fine. Right? And he's giving them spiritual wisdom and knowledge as a teacher. And then he'll move in another direction and he'll do something else. Very expert at this. The problem is, one day that bubble is popped, and those masks are destroyed. And then when we're left naked, without our mask, without any mask, then what do? Then a person's life is destroyed. This is what happens. Material world, Prabhupada says, it has a way of embarrassing every living entity over time. This word, embarrassing, Prabhupada uses often. The living entity is embarrassed by the material world. Have you ever thought, why embarrassed? Because that's what happens, right? Material nature gradually, she tears that mask away and leaves us naked, standing. And the people who we created this impression with, as old age arrives, or in our weak moments when no one is looking, she tears that away and we're left ashamed. And not only are we ashamed because of what others think, but we become ashamed of our own self. Right? Our own sense of self becomes destroyed because our sense of self was tied with who we were. You know, this is the saddest thing that happens when people retire. They lose any sense of motivation in their life, any sense of direction. Because what do I do now? My mask has been torn away from me. What is my mission? And material nature, Maya Devi, will do this for everyone. Right? This is how she embarrasses us in the end, by making us come face to face with who we actually are. And then we can't handle it. Spiritual life means taking off those masks ourselves and saying, who am I really underneath those masks? And maintaining that identity consistently. Jibir Swarupoi Krishner Nityadas. I'm a servant of Krishna. This is who I am. Right? And so in the Varnashrama system, one gradually works one's way to this point of being able to take off those masks and come to a point where one is comfortable saying, yes, what is outside is what is inside, and this is who I am. So take a look, for example, at the position of a sannyasi. The point of sannyas is not to wear the greatest mask in the world and say, oh, this is who I am and all should respect me. It's quite the opposite. It's the taking off of all of those masks. A sannyasi is regarded as civil dead man. Right? The sannyasi is dead to society. In fact, we don't do this, but in other sampradayas, a sannyasi will perform his own funeral rites before taking sannyas. Just to make the point that the sannyasi, in regard to the world, is dead. Right? No more masks anymore. Whether I'm here, or I'm in the airport, or I'm at work, or whatever, I'm always there, dressed like this. Always, this is my identity. Right? There's no changing, no hiding. I go to work, I change my dress. I come here, I change my dress. Right? No. What is inside, what is outside? What is now, what is then? It's consistent in heart, in body, in mind, in words, in every way. We're consistent. When we come to that point of deep honesty, that's what makes a great teacher, right? That's someone who is worthy of accepting as one's teacher. So that's our goal as devotees in Krishna consciousness. Instead of taking what's outside and internalizing it, is being going from this direction, knowing who am I really? I am a devotee of Krishna, and how far have I actually been gone to understanding that fact? Can I be honest with myself? What is my real level of advancement? And then projecting that out in the world and saying, okay, this much surrender I have to Krishna, this much I can give to others. And no, I am not that person. I will not try to behave like that person. But I will try to advance because that's where I want to get to. And that essentially is the difference between a devotee, between a genuine teacher and a fake teacher, between a demon and a devotee, between a hypocrite and someone who is genuine. Because that is not present in Hiranyakashipu. Therefore, despite the fact that he knows his content well and he knows how to teach it well, he's not worthy of being accepted as a teacher. So, I stop there and see if anyone has any questions or thoughts or comments on what was said. Okay, so many hands. Let's just start from left to right here, or my left to right. Yes.
Oh, Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Thank you.
What is your name? Radhika Raman?
Yes.
Prabhu, nice to meet you. Nice, very inspirational class. I'm not trying to build you up. It was actually an inspirational class. There's a joke that devotees say, fake it till you make it. So I just fake it till you make it. So that just came to mind. I've heard that several times throughout the years. But in regards to the false ego, in this material world, you know, you said we all have false ego, which usually means identification of the body, kind of transforming to I'm this center of the universe, my society, my nation, et cetera, based on, you know, who I think I am is the center of the universe. And this always brings to mind the example of like Nazi Germany. Because it's actually mentioned in this previous verse before you read this one. It says in this verse from Bhagavatam that when one is conditioned by the most material nature and the subtle and gross body, he thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. Mm. And this always brings to mind of like Nazi Germany, where they have a slogan like, my Aryan blood is superior to everyone else. But if you think in terms of the Bhagavatam, is that our body is composed not just of blood, but blood, stool, urine, pus, vomit. Mm. And so they never say throughout history, my Aryan blood, stool, urine, pus, and vomit superior. That would sound completely ridiculous. So we can see that all quarrels in life are due to this false ego identification, just like when you're in school. Mm. You know, there's cliques everywhere. So how can one, especially among devotees, what to speak of course, outsiders, but what to speak among devotees, how does one develop this appreciation of all varieties of types, devotees. I have one other question, but I'll, you know, maybe wait till if there's enough time. So can you explain that?
So how do we develop appreciation?
Yeah, for varieties of life, basically. And not based on the false ego, essentially. Based on the spirit, so vidya vinaya sampane, brahmane gabhihasane, etc.
Yeah, that's a good question. Honesty with ourselves and honesty with others. Sometimes with honesty we think it means let me not think anything of myself, right? Honesty, like I've been describing, means not bloating an artificial conception of who I am. But it also means not artificially depressing one's idea of who we are. Because we don't want arrogance, but at the same time, we also don't want to hammer ourselves into the ground and develop a case of low self-esteem where I'm not able to do any service for the Lord because I think I'm so worthless and useless. In other words, we need to understand honestly, okay, this is what resource Krishna has given me to do his service. This is not possessed by me. It's a gift from Krishna, but I've been given it. And if I don't recognize that Krishna has given me something to act in such a way so as to serve him, then I'm not serving Krishna properly, right? It's just like, you know, sometimes it can also become very customary amongst devotees to artificially just say, oh, I'm useless, I'm worthless, I'm terrible. And no, I don't have any good qualities, and actually I can't do any service because I'm so, you know. But in fact, that's disrespecting Krishna, right? It's disrespecting the Lord. I mean, suppose I give you some nice gift. I give you a laptop. I can't do anything. This laptop doesn't work. It's terrible. It's horrible. And actually, I don't have anything to my... And I just gave you a nice laptop, and it works, right? It would be hurtful if you took that gift, criticized that gift, and said it was useless. The same is true about our own lives. Krishna gives us some asset, some ability. We should not artificially inflate it, but we don't need to artificially deflate it either. The key is not to possess it. The key is to understand, no, this is a gift I've received. And it's a valuable gift. We've each received valuable gifts. Let me now use the gift nicely for the service of the person who gave it to me. That's a devotee's honesty. It's not artificial inflation, and it's not artificial depression either. That's what humility really means. None of this belongs to me. It's not about me. But no doubt it's a great gift from Krishna. Whatever I do have, let me use it in his service. And that is the attitude that helps us appreciate not just ourselves, but also others. When we see others in terms of, look at what a wonderful gift Krishna has given this person, they're able to do that service so wonderfully. And every living entity in this world has a particular gift given by Krishna, and therefore the potential to serve him in a particular way. And when we see a devotee using that potential to serve the Lord in even a slight way, then that should be the source of our appreciation for them. So it's a two-way street. We see that in ourselves, we see that in others. And then that builds our appreciation.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. I was really appreciating this point on not being hypocritical when we're speaking. And the question comes that our philosophy is so high, all of the purports, and we're asked to repeat the philosophy. And there's such a gap that some of us may be experiencing. So in order to deliver something on a, you know, an absolute point of a philosophical position, how can we do that? And how can we do that, yeah, just in general?
Yeah. Delivering the highest point, you're right, our philosophy is very, very advanced. Delivering the highest point or the highest teaching, honestly, and understanding how far I've gotten to that point, to actually living it, that is what honesty means, ultimately, right? So delivering the highest philosophy as it is in fact a big part of being genuine and not hypocritical. Because what happens sometimes is when we realize that I can't make it up to that point, I'm here, the philosophy standard is here, and I can't get here, at least not overnight, then what we do often is we move the standard to here, because that way I've made it to the top. Right? Two ways to get to the top, either to climb or to bring what's to the top, bring it down. And so actually presenting the highest philosophy as it is a big component of being honest, being non-hypocritical. But that presenting of as it is has to be accompanied by an internal understanding of what do I need to do still in my spiritual life to progress, right? And those two things have to go hand in hand. In other words, being honest is living with that dichotomy, being willing to live with it and say, this is what the standard is, this is where I'm at, and this is the work I need to do to get there. Rather than, this is where I'm at, so the standard must be here too. So let's just preach this because I'm not there anyway, right? So a preacher is able to repeat what is at is as it is on the strength of the example and the teachings of one's own spiritual master and the previous acharyas. By saying, look, here is an example that's worthy of following. Here's the highest teaching, and here's that highest teaching shown, embodied in the life and activities of Srila Prabhupada, or of the spiritual master, or of the stories, the Vaishnavas of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's on that strength that we can present the highest teachings. Not on the strength of, look at this is the highest teaching and see how it's embodied in me. But no, I'm trying to get there, and this is how I genuinely practice. But look at the highest example. Look at the standard. It's embodied, right? And so this is the importance of parampara, right? This is the importance of the disciplic succession, is that in that we have examples where we can point to highest standard and genuine practice at the same time, while understanding that I still have a ways to get there in my own practice.
So it's very nice to see you. Thank you for coming to Chicago. It's been a while.
Yes.
on the point of being honest with oneself, you were expressing how we take off one mask, put on another, and then take off one and put on another, depending on the circumstances. Sometimes these masks are not so distinct. Beyond these masks, there is a mask or two that's more pervasive, that goes with us or we put on for all circumstances. And quite often we do think of that as who we really are. And even if we were to ask ourselves honestly, you know, who am I really? I may not have the, honestly, I may not have the understanding that I'm a servant of Krishna. So I will rely on some mask as who I really am, honestly, to the degree of my understanding. And that may be a mask.
Yes.
And so we do sometimes work with the world and say, this is who I am. And somehow it doesn't cut it once in a while. So what would a person do when for example, let's say I have the habit of, let's say, speaking harshly, or I might be very timid that I can't really put my left foot forward without 10 people assuring me about it, whatever.
Yes.
And I just say, this is who I am. What to do?
Yes.
So please help. What would you suggest?
Yes.
That a person with that honesty, you know, what's the path forward look like?
Yes. So that's a very thoughtful point. And you see, it's actually not possible to live in this world without wearing some kind of mask in some situation, right? These masks are a convenient way of describing in Sanskrit what is called upadhi. And these upadhis, as long as we are in the material body, the body itself is our greatest upadhi. It is the greatest mask that we wear. And by body, we mean not just the physical body, which is clearly a mask, but also the subtle body, namely our intelligence, our mind, our personality traits. And ultimately, those upadhis are not even a bad thing, so long as we don't confuse those upadhis for who we really are. And the point being that we have to simultaneously develop the understanding that I'm underlying a devotee of Krishna, while accepting the fact that that essential identity, while I'm in the material world, will always work through the upadhis that the Lord has given me, the masks that the Lord has given me, right? So if I have a particular timid nature, then to some extent I have to work with that nature to express my essential identity, namely a servant of Krishna, right? So that's what my identity is. That's who I really am underneath all those masks. And that's what we're working to realize. We may not realize it fully, but that's the process, basically, to get us to realize underneath my timid or my extrovert nature or whatever, that's who I really am. But I then have to express that identity through whatever package Krishna has given me. Now, occasionally, in our service to Krishna, Krishna will give us some rare opportunities where he will poke holes even in that basic masks that we have of our body and our subtle body. He'll create a little tear in it. And those moments can be very frightening in our practice of Krishna consciousness, when those things at a deepest level that they think, that's who I am. So the introvert, for example, says, look, I really understand this through my life, that I'm not meant to be out there because I'm an introvert and I'd much rather stay behind the scenes and do whatever service I can. A big service, but behind the scenes. And once in a while, I mean, and that understanding of himself may be truthful, right? It may be genuine. Yes, that person is an introvert. But occasionally in Krishna consciousness, Krishna will tear through that a little bit, and he'll send that introvert into a circumstance that they have no choice but to be out in the front stage. And those are the moments that that internal identity really is, it's an opportunity to grab hold of that and really tell oneself, look, I'm a servant of Krishna. This is really who I am, right? So even if I'm standing here in a stage in front of 1,000 people and I don't want to and I tried every way to avoid this, somehow I'm present here, let me just surrender to Krishna and somehow get through this. And that's when we see often that Krishna helps the most, right? Because the hole is there in the mask and everything is leaking through and we just don't know what to make of ourselves, and we say, I'm, sir, your servant, Krishna, please help me, please protect me, help me, make me an instrument in your hands. Right? And as a devotee, we have to both recognize the fact that, yes, by and large, we will do our service using the package that Krishna has given us, while at the same time cherishing and not resenting those moments where Krishna forces us to behave in a way that is fundamentally not gelling with who, what our mask is and what the package we have, right, given to us. And that we take as a blessing from Krishna, that yes, Krishna has shown me, you know, in this particular circumstance that, yes, I'm his servant and ultimately I'm dependent on him. Even though my mask does not prepare me in any way, my upadhis don't prepare me in any way to do this service, I'm going to have to. So that's essentially the tears in those masks, the breaks of those upadhis, while not being removed completely, those are the opportunities that Krishna gives us to experience genuine surrender to him. Does that...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our time is complete, so I don't want to take everyone over time here. Maybe the following questions we can address individually. what do you, is that okay? Yeah? Is okay? Okay. So I'll try to answer the following questions quickly so we can get through a few here.
Hare Krishna. Just last week I was having a discussion with Gokulananda Prabhu about Yudhishthira Maharaj's example in the first canto. And it's very peculiar because he's showing such attachment for Dhritarashtra, who is not a devotee, and who's actually hurt devotees and tried to kill devotees. And generally we hear that we shouldn't be attached to those who are not devotees.
Who's showing attachment, sorry?
Maharaj Yudhishthira, when Dhritarashtra leaves home.
Yes.
And then Gokulananda Prabhu was pointing out that, and then later on Narada Muni reveals that the reason for his attachment was this sense of, I will maintain them, which Narada Muni exposes and helps him overcome. But
I will be?
That I will maintain them, right? Uh-huh. Yudhishthira Maharaj had this this false sense of being the maintainer of his aunt and uncle. And then he made a very nice point that what makes him a pure devotee is not the fact that, or rather, what it's not a problem that he became overcome with this sense of being the maintainer and then had to be corrected. What makes him a pure devotee is that he didn't care admitting that I have this attachment, and that when he was instructed, he kind of accepted that instruction and sort of moved on with it. And it something Jai Jagannath Prabhu, I was telling you about Jai Jagannath Prabhu in the car, and something he always says is advancement means, progress means letting go of something and then accepting something new.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could just speak about this a little bit, because I find that it's not so easy to always do that, because when you come to a certain position, especially if you're the king of the world, you know, then you may be more comfortable not admitting or even being corrected, you know, especially if you're in a senior position, like being corrected, being admitting that, oh, I didn't know. Or could you just speak a little bit about that? And that's actually what a pure devotee is okay with?
That's a great question. I'll try to answer it as briefly as possible here. I asked this question once of Sachinandan Swami. I asked him, well, you know, how do we maintain a sense of humility and proper direction when you're in a situation where everyone is looking up to you? And he said, what he tries to practice, which is something that he heard from Tamal Krishna Goswami when he asked him that same question, was that every devotee should have a few people in their life, 2, 3, 4 people, whom we trust enough and who know us well enough so that from them we can take anything, a slap or a pat on the back, and realize that both are genuine, and I need to accept both. You see, a pat on the back and praise cannot be accepted at face value coming from anyone. We live in a world where praise is often offered for all kinds of ulterior motivations. And so, can we accept that praise or not? Well, there should be people in our life when they say, yes, well done, then we can really think, yeah, okay, I did something nicely for Krishna, and that's helpful in our Krishna consciousness. At the same time, those people should be able to slap us and we accept it and we realize, yes, I need to improve in this regard. Because also slaps in this world, if we were to take seriously every criticism that we received, we would never be able to do any service. And we see this in the example of many great devotees. Prabhupada was criticized by so many hundreds of people before he came to the West. As, you can't do this, this is not right, no, it's not going to... So, what to take seriously, right? But we need to have a few people in our life who we understand, this person knows us, and we trust them, that when they give us a slap, we understand, okay, I have to really improve. Those. So, that makes it easier to accept and to let go, I found, on a practical level, right? Because when do you know to let go of something? Well, you understand, okay, it's given this circumstance, given it's coming from this person, I need to let go. It may not be easy, but this is what I need to do. So, you know, honesty is both of those elements, is recognizing who I am, but then being willing to improve. And like with Maharaj Yudhishthira, taking that instruction to heart and moving on. Because otherwise, if it's one without the other, then also it can be a problem, right? That this is who I am, Prabhu, I'm so sorry. I'm really a fallen devotee. So go find a pure devotee to do what you need. So that attitude can then keep us in that fallen state, right? So it's utsaha nishchaya dhairyat, right? It's you need the enthusiasm to improve and the patience or honesty to recognize where we are at the same time. And both of those things have to go hand in hand with each other. I need to improve, but yes, I'll be honest, this is where I'm at. But no, I need to improve. And that has to be a constant dialectic in our lives, back and forth, back and forth. One, if we become too heavy on one side, it leads to problems. We become too heavy on, I gotta go, it can become lead to over-endeavor, atyahara, prayasa rather. And it can be hurtful to others, right? We can kind of bulldoze our way through Krishna consciousness and commit a lot of offenses in the process. But then being just purely honest, this is where I'm at, without that enthusiasm can lead to opposite problems, which means I don't bulldoze anyone, but my spiritual life also doesn't get anywhere, right? So one way or the other, we have to keep both hand in hand, right? We have to keep them balanced in our Krishna consciousness. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thanks.
You mentioned briefly the role of Varnashram and our conditioned nature gradually being reduced and purified until we're in a position where we can abandon all upadis, or at least, you know, see how they can be actually engaged. But how much would you say devotees should strive to be aware of their particular nature, even if it's the conditioned one? Because on the one hand, we hear abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. We hear, oh, do the needful, you know. But on the other side, you're bringing this out, like, there will be friction, there will be discomfort if one is kind of pushing themselves too much outside of their comfort zone, and that excess austerity could cause real hardship and damage for oneself and in one's dealings with others. So,
yes.
I guess my question is it something we really should be considering, this idea of what is our nature?
Yes.
And also, if it's something we should consider, then what are some signs that whatever type of engagement we have right now actually isn't a good fit for us?
Yes.
Long term.
Yes. So there's these two things are very different, comfort zone and nature, okay? And we often conflate the two, and then we get, you see, what is comfortable for me is not necessarily my nature, and what is my nature is not necessarily going to be comfortable. So I might be bound to do a particular activity, just like Arjuna's nature, as was a kshatriya, to fight. Getting on that battlefield and fighting, was it comfortable? No. It was the most uncomfortable thing he ever did in his life. And in fact, he would refuse to do it for that reason. But Krishna says, no, get out of your comfort zone and do what is your nature. So that's the ideal circumstance, when we're working in our nature outside our comfort zone. Because then we're doing what we can do for Krishna. We're using the gift, the resources he's given us, okay, the laptop he provided us. We're using it, but we're advancing because we're working outside our comfort zone. And that position in Krishna consciousness is what we have to strive for. Okay, that's not easy to determine what is our nature and what is outside our comfort zone. And that's where we need a healthy mix of self-introspection and mentors, guides, who can tell us also, looking at who we are and say, I think really this is what your nature is. I think you'll be satisfied doing this, you know. I know it's comfortable right now, but if you did this extra, I think you'd really use a lot of the skills you'd have and you'd feel very satisfied. I've been lucky in a couple points in life to have had people who told me that. And it helped immensely, because the human nature is to really take the easiest route. You know, that's kind of our standard. So it's a combination, self-reflection and guidance. These two things put together can help us determine where exactly what our nature is and what our comfort zone is, so that we work within the nature and outside the comfort zone. And that process of guidance and understanding is one that has to go on continuously. In other words, what is our nature and what is our comfort zone will change throughout our life, because we're talking about here material nature, right? Our physical and psychological body, and nothing in the material world is permanent. So what is my nature now may adjust. It may not change drastically, but it will adjust in the course of 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So that's why this process of recalibration has to be an ongoing process. Okay? So big topic, but I'll leave it at that for now. Questions and comments. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.